And our next case this morning is Deanna Coyer v. Andrew Saul. All right, I see both counsel. Mr. Duncan, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Dana Duncan on behalf of Deanna Coyer. This case is simple. Did the commissioner meet his burden of proof at step five to establish Ms. Coyer could perform a significant number of jobs in the national economy? If you apply this court's precedent from Chavez and Brace, the answer is no. At hearing, the vocational expert was asked to provide the source of his numbers. He testified that he used U.S. Publishing's Occupation Employment Quarterly, or the OEQ. At hearing, the vocational expert was asked further to OEQ used an equal distribution method. He did. Counsel objected at that point. The ALJ asked no question. The ALJ did not inquire about the method, the nature of the OEQ, or any reliance on the data by the vocational expert. The burden of proof at step five rests with the commissioner, and they have the duty, as outlined in Chavez, to ensure that a viable method be employed.
Mr. Duncan, why shouldn't we consider the Chavez point waived in this case because it was undeveloped? There was a sort of categorical objection, a blanket objection made based on Chavez, and in discussion with the ALJ, an opportunity was extended to actually brief the question, and that was never done.
Well,
so the ALJ considered the objections that I'd like to accept more briefing, a post-hearing brief on the question, kept the matter open in order to accommodate development of the argument, and it was never developed.
If the plaintiff is required or the claimant is required to develop the argument more than what was done, which is to note the objection, to outline exactly the problems and to cite the proper case, it shifts the burden of proof from the claimant or from the commissioner to the claimant.
It's not a question of proof. It's just a question of developing the legal argument that you were making for rejecting the vocational expert's testimony.
Well, and there's a good question about that of what is required. As of Thursday, we now have the Carr decision from the Supreme Court, which if you look at whether the burden of proof in this case is a procedural due process question, there's a question of whether that even has to be developed at all, or if plaintiff even has to do anything, given that the burden of proof rests with the commissioner. And
Mr. Duncan, let me ask the same question in a slightly different way. When I read the transcript of the proceeding before the ALJ, there's two things that I come away with. You objected on the basis that the equal distribution method was being applied, and you pointed to Chavez. And in substance, the ALJ said, I have no idea what you're talking about. And then said, there will be an opportunity for post-hearing briefing. You know, as well as anybody, how busy ALJs are. That window was open for you to articulate on your client's behalf your objection with some particularity, and you didn't do so. So we don't have a transcript here that shows us that the ALJ even understood the objection, and there was nothing your client did to fill that in. So how can we call that legal error?
Well, the ALJ, by the decision, indicated that she read the decision. And I guess what the question is ultimately is what is the responsibility of the claimant in these proceedings to outline this and to make it so observable that it the ALJ has to act? I mean, is there this court since the 1990s has determined that if there's going to be a problem or a situation where the claimant's residual functional capacity falls in between the grid rules, that a vocational expert has to be available to testify. If the claimant realizes that there is no vocational expert being called to the hearing, is it the responsibility of the claimant to then subpoena and bring him in his own vocational expert in order to try to prove the case for the commissioner, to work against his own client, his client's detriment, to express exactly what their responsibilities are?
I don't know that we're talking about a big grand issue like that. I think all we're talking about is a modicum of diligence. And you were invited, were you not, to submit a brief articulating your objection? You didn't send anything in.
Correct. I guess that is what I'm saying is the ultimate issue in there is what exactly is required. Because if more is required than what I did, then it's my position that it shifts the burden of proof from the commissioner to the claimant. Because the ALJ read the decision, the ALJ read Chavez, had an opportunity to see exactly what Chavez said, and didn't do anything. So I guess that... I guess at this point in time, Your Honors, most everything I had to indicate in this has been addressed, and I will just reserve the remainder for rebuttal.
That's fine. Mr. James.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors, and good morning to you, Mr. Duncan. I'm Daniel Robert James, and I'm presenting on behalf of the commissioner. Your Honors.
Counsel, your face is almost unseeable, because you have an extraordinarily bright background.
Oh, okay.
You need to make it dimmer. It's a basic rule of Zoom never to argue in front of an open window.
Oh, okay. Oops. Then let me just shift here a little bit. This might do a little better. Can you see me?
Counsel, all the windows are open.
Right. This is our problem in this place here. Let me then put you this way one second.
Well, if you get your face very close to the camera, that might help.
Is this better? Can you see me now?
A little better.
A little better. Would this be okay to proceed like this? Did you want me to arrange
it? It doesn't look like we have very much choice if you can't close the windows.
Oh, okay. It takes like a couple minutes. They're kind of a pain. I apologize about that, Your Honors. I keep that in mind the next time I'm up here. I'm Daniel Robert James, and I'm presenting on behalf of the commissioner. Your Honors, the ALJ had the burden at step five, and here's what she did to meet it. She called Dr. Matthew Sprong, an impressively credentialed vocational expert with a PhD in rehabilitation. Dr. Sprong disclosed his sources, and these are sources the court is familiar with. There was Occupational Employment Quarterly, a source this court has recognized as one that vocational experts customarily rely on, and there was the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, which the agency's regulations administratively notice. Dr. Sprong also disclosed his method, the equal distribution method, and used his nearly decade of experience to determine that there were over 500,000 jobs that Coyer could perform despite her limitations. And the ALJ didn't stop there. The ALJ even offered, if Coyer had requested it, a supplemental hearing and kept the record open so that Coyer could submit a post-hearing brief. Because a reasonable adjudicator could agree that this was sufficient, the ALJ met the substantial evidence standard at step five. Now let's take a look at what Coyer did. Given the opportunity to undermine the vocational expert's testimony, Coyer lodged a single objection that erroneously claimed that this court's holding in Chavez versus Berryhill had effectively invalidated the equal distribution method. Coyer rested on that objection and never submitted a post-hearing brief, despite on multiple occasions saying she would do so. That objection did not show anything to show that the vocational testimony was unreliable, otherwise cast doubts on it. So the ALJ did what any ALJ would do. She rejected that objection as it was presented because it was based on a flawed basis. And as we say in our brief, this is the correct result, and it's essentially the case begins and ends here because Coyer lodged an objection based on the false premise and the ALJ rejected it. And that's really all there is to this case. But even if you go past that, Coyer did not unearth or even attempt to unearth a single shortcoming to the vocational expert's testimony, And instead, Coyer's logic in her brief is essentially that if you say, I don't like the vocational expert's data and sources, that this would somehow be enough to undermine that testimony. But as the district court said, this gives no indication of what the ALJ would be expected to ask or to fix. And if the court were to side with Coyer, ALJs and lower courts would have no idea what needs to be proven to show reliability. And because this was just a general objection to the equal distribution method and not fact specific in any way, it's essentially going to just invite the same testimony to be recycled throughout every case. So what Coyer is going for here is asking you to make the big holding and find that the equal distribution method is presumptively invalid. And this would be the wrong holding for several reasons. First, it would be a monumental and sweeping holding requiring the ALJ to rehabilitate vocational testimony when there's no flaws shown to that testimony. This would go against BSTEC, a Supreme Court case that came after Chavez that held that the ALJ can accept the vocational expert's testimony without significant testing, and a case that encouraged claimants to probe that testimony for errors. This would go against your holding in Chavez, which said that the court intends no new obligations. And while this court has criticized the equal distribution method in dicta, this court or no other court has found the equal distribution method to be invalid. Second, Your Honors, the ALJ's Step 5 burden is not limitless, and that's what what Coyer is effectively asking you to do, is to find it's limitless. Remember the burden here. The burden is to show a significant number of jobs, and it's not necessarily a statistically accurate number that's going to be published in a journal or so. It's either the number is significant or it's not significant. And indeed, other circuits have recognized that this is a limited burden. It's one that shifts back to the claimant once met, and then it's up to the claimant to show meaningful uncertainty.
Mr. Jonas, where does the commissioner stand in its project to replace the Dictionary of Occupational Titles?
So I have, our website is updated, and I know that Coyer said in the brief that it was abandoned. It has not been abandoned. In fact, right here I'm holding, this is a printout from the website of it. And the latest entries from fiscal year 2020 show that the they've collected a second year, and they're going to be again a third year of data collection as part of the second wave of a five-year update, and then that the Bureau of Labor Statistics will publish the data from the initial year of the second wave. So they're in the data collection process still. They've been collecting them over 5 years and then comparing each year. And so they're still in the process of creating that system.
Still in the process that began in 2008?
That's correct, Your Honor. It's taken them a lot longer, I think, than they intended, but you can understand why, because if they, if they release the new system and then it's flawed and there's big issues with it, then step five is so important in so many of these cases that a change like that could result in really delay to all the claimants as well. So I think they're taking their time, perhaps more time than anybody ever imagined or wanted, but they're taking their time in developing that system. Your Honors, yes, this step five burden is not limitless. And this court has actually provided claimants with a roadmap of how they can secure remand. And it's not a nebulous or impossible standard. In Gebauer, this court rejected blanket objections and held that the claimant must cross-examine the vocational expert to show shortcomings. And in Chavez, that's happened. The claimant pressed the vocational expert four times for an explanation of why two different methods produce such disparate results. And when the vocational expert could not provide a plausible explanation, the court remanded. In Brace, the vocational expert's answers were unintelligible. The court remanded. And in a series of cases like Donahue, Britton, and Overman, the court at times has remanded when the claimant identifies conflicts with the Dictionary of Occupational Titles. But, Your Honors, that was not the case here. Coyer asked no questions. Coyer showed no conflicts. And Coyer established no serious issues with the reliability of the data. Fourth, Your Honors, Coyer points out that Occupational Employment Quarterly uses an equal distribution method. But, Your Honors, that's a fact that cuts both ways, because this court has called Occupational Employment Quarterly a source on which vocational experts customarily rely. And this court is not alone in doing that, as numerous courts and circuits have done so. And BSTEC held that if the ALJ relies on testimony based on well-accepted methodologies and sources, that the ALJs can rely on that Step 5 testimony. Finally, as my opponent mentions, last week the Supreme Court held in a case called Carr that there's no issue exhaustion for constitutional claims. But I would direct this court to footnote 5, which says for other claims that are more routine, something that would likely be like this Step 5 case here, the scales may tip differently. But in the end, Your Honor, that actually doesn't matter, and it won't really affect this case, because our argument here is that Coyer was required to show a lack of substantial evidence at step five. And Bistek cautioned Coyer that even without significant testing, that the ALJ can rely on the vocational expert's testimony. So the court did not even go into the issue exhaustion, and the result would still be to affirm. In closing, Your Honors, we ask that you reject Coyer's new rule that would create sweeping obligations against this court's directives in Chavez, and affirm the correct result, which is that the ALJ rejected Coyer's erroneous objection as presented. Alternatively, we ask that you find that the ALJ met her burden at step five in showing a significant number of jobs, that being the over 500,000 jobs, and that Coyer introduced no meaningful uncertainty into that testimony, so it was proper for the ALJ to rely on it. And unless Your Honors have any further questions, then we'll rest on our brief. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Duncan, rebuttal.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. First of all, Ms. Coyer has never asserted that the equal distribution method is per se unreliable. Chavez makes that clear. But what Chavez did do is it said that the issue is questionable and then laid out what information the ALJ needs to solicit from the expert in order to allow the equal distribution method to be deemed viable. I heard in Mr. Jans's argument three separate times where he is asserting that somehow if the vocational expert provides any testimony at all, it's the burden shifts to the claimant to prove that the testimony is false or misleading. I don't know of any basis in law, I don't know of any basis in case law that says that the burden shifts. We have what was normally the situation. We had a testimony, we had the OEQ, we had an equal distribution method, and it is per se by Chavez questionable. Not that it needs to be wiped out, it's per se questionable. And as and the fact that it's questionable at that point, the case lays out what needs to be done, and it just wasn't in this particular case. If the court is saying that the burden shifts, that's fine. It, at least we'll know what is necessary. If the court is indicating that we have to do more than that, I guess I understand the point. But the question ultimately is whose responsibility it is. And under that, we have a situation where the administrative law judge who said she read the case and can easily see it. We're not talking about a novice ALJ. She said she read the case. And she didn't follow up and ask anything about whether the testimony was reliable, whether he believed that the testimony was based in some fact, whether he had some national labor market study that showed the test or the evidence was reliable, or that it was practical or based upon his training and experience and in placing people. We have nothing. And at that point in time, I guess the burden should not shift to the claimant to prove it. All you need to do is raise the doubt as to the validity of the testimony, which is what was done. And at that point, it's the burden on the commissioner to go forward and establish it. But ALJs in hearings on a regular basis now, especially with my office, don't even wait for our office to cross-examine. They immediately go into asking testimony of the vocational expert about their methods, the systems, what they're using, the reliability, if they've cross-checked this. That's all we're asking for. And in most of those cases, because that's done, it gives us an opportunity to go forward and to ask the right questions to probe. But I can't probe if there's nothing done by the commissioner. It would be the essence of me working against my client in his behalf to do otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.